I probably just stopped it. No, I think I got it going. Okay. I want to take a reading out of the book of Psalms in the 78th division of the Psalms, about the first seven verses for a background. And the title of my message this morning is, It All Begins at Home. It All Begins at Home. And I guess my mind has been on the service from last Sunday, certainly where that Bella and Natalia made it known that they were lost and seeking the Lord. But also the events that took place, certainly down in Florida. And the first thing that I hear on the news is, well, what can we do to fix this problem? You know, what are we going to do? What's the government going to do? We need more gun control, or we need more security at the school. And in the back of all that, I hear a voice of reason coming through in some of the commentaries out there, and that is that the problem is the breakdown of the home. That is where the problem lies, and unfortunately, our government and those who are in positions to perhaps help, they might say that. And they might see that as the root of the problem, but unfortunately, I feel that much of the stuff that they're promoting undermines the home rather than builds it up. And so we truly need to go back to the basis of, if we're going to cure the problems of our society and the problems of our family, it begins at home. That's where it started. That's where God intended for it to start. And we play a huge role in that, certainly as parents, but even as grandparents and just as older ones to help and to guide. That's something that in every culture, in every society, through all ages of time, the family has been the nucleus and the beginning of whatever that society was going to become, whatever that nation was going to be. It has its foundations in the family. The old saying is, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And that's true, because the foundation principles that are taught our children from the time that they're born and begin to prepare them for the world, those are the things that will change the world, either for good or for bad. And so our role as parents particularly is so vital and so important. In the book of Psalms, in the 78th division, it says, Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable, and I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from our children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and His strength and His wonderful works that He has done. For He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, to the generations to come, that the generations to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments. And that's the background reading, but my text comes from a verse that we're all familiar with, and that's in Proverbs in the 22nd chapter and the 6th verse, and it says, Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Now, you know, that's an old saying, and I'm sure that as Solomon gathered these Proverbs together, they were well known. It didn't have to be something that was divinely revealed to Solomon, but it was a collection of truths that were prevalent in that society and have been prevalent in every society, that the way that you bring up a child and the bend that you put on that child will determine to very much the direction that they will go in their older life and the way that they will behave themselves. It's a reminder to us that it's in the beginning of those children's lives that so much importance is put on making sure they're bent in the right direction. And I don't know how that you can bend a child in the right direction without God being a part of that, without morals which come from God being a part of that. And certainly as we look out into our society, we see violence on every hand. We see it manifest in the schools. We see it manifest on the streets. We see it manifest in the homes through home violence. Certainly we've all been hearing about the situation of what's going on in the White House with one of the advisors quitting because of, and rightfully so, because of domestic abuse and violence. All of that is contrary to the good character and nature of God, and certainly is contrary to the way that we want our children to behave when they grow up. And so that comes back again to why that it's so important for us to bend them in the right direction to start with as they begin to learn and to grow. The one thing that that I think that we should all be aware of is that you cannot legislate morality. You can make rules to punish someone who breaks a law, but you cannot, by making a law, make someone moral and do the right things. You can only control them within those boundaries by punishment. And I hear so much about the school shootings. Well, let's make more laws. Let's make this change or that change. But the problem again goes back more to the nature of the individual and the moralities that the individual has and what they view as right and what they view as wrong. And so you can't make laws that will make people moral. You can only make laws that you can then enforce by punishments or by some means, but that doesn't make them moral. And so let's not think that by making more rules that that's going to create moral people. And so that's I don't believe that that's the answer. I believe that we need laws, and I believe that perhaps even though that I'm certainly a Second Amendment advocate, but I believe that we might have to make some changes from things, but that's not going to solve the problem in the long term. The only thing that's going to solve the problem in the long term is when people's hearts are changed, and that morality comes from their being and their nature rather than just being guided by the rules that are around them. Now, the other thing that that we have to always remember is that we can't be so busy trying to fix all the problems out there that we ignore the need in our own homes. That's something that a lot of preachers are guilty of, is that they're so busy taking care of everybody else's family that their own family doesn't get the attention that they need, and their own children go astray. And so, you know the old saying, the shoemaker's children had no shoes? We can't be so busy about social programs and all the needs that are out there that we forget that our main responsibility is to those children that are in our own home. That our own children have got to have our attention. That's not to say that we shouldn't help, that we shouldn't do, that we shouldn't be active in those things, but I fear that there's a lot of children whose parents are so busy with social things and social programs and all of those things that they think they've got to do that they neglect the simpler things and the most important things, which is that time at home with their children and instilling the right values in their own children. And so certainly right acting in public has to start at home. It has to start at home. And in that passage that I read for a text, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old he will not depart from it. There's really three elements in that. There's first of all the one who's doing the training, and then there's the one that's being trained, which is the child. And then there is the training itself. What kind of training? And so those three things need to be addressed. And certainly one of the most important of those is the parents. The parents who are to train their children. We're not supposed to hire that out to the schools and expect them to substitute for our training of the children. Yes, they can get a certain amount of education and a certain amount of social skills there, but that does not alleviate the responsibility at home for the parents to be the ones who are the primary instructors of those children at home and to teach them, because that's been the principle that God laid down. He gave us children, and along with those children comes that responsibility. Now, bringing up children is a lot of it is, biggest part of it is governing them. And parents have a responsibility to govern their children, which is to bend them, to shape them, and to bring them in the right direction. But before a parent can govern their children, they got to be able to govern themselves. And that's where so many families, I feel, are falling down, is they are not able to even govern themselves. How can they govern their children if they can't govern themselves morally, spiritually, socially, and financially? All of those is a realm in which that the parent has to, first of all, be able to govern themselves in those areas so that they can govern their children. And certainly, it's morally is the first thing that I mentioned. And a parent cannot teach their children to behave correctly and to do right unless they themselves do. It's a known fact that the way that a child is brought up in a family, if there's violence in the family, it'll almost always result in that child having some violence involved in their behavior as they get out of that family, as they go out on their own. And so the first thing is that a parent has got to be able to govern their own moral behavior. Talked to a friend yesterday that is going through a difficult time with his daughter and her husband. Her husband is involved with other women, bringing them into the house. There's violence involved, and there's children in the house. And all that's going to do is reproduce itself. And so the parents have got to govern their own moral life. They got to abstain from the things that are immoral, abstain from bringing things and introducing them to their children that are wrong and incorrect. And so that's the first thing, is that a parent must look at their own lives and govern their own morality. They've got to govern their own spirituality. Does the parent have a relationship with God? Do they even see the need for that? Because if they won't themselves seek God and have a relationship with God, how can they expect their children to do that? Because just as I said, you can't legislate morality. You can't legislate spirituality either. And children gather these things, and they mimic these things by what they see. And so it's important for a parent to have a spiritual relationship, to recognize themselves that they are a spiritual being, and to have a relationship with their Creator. And so many families out there, as we've discussed before, don't even believe in God, or if they believe in His existence, they don't have a relationship with Him to where that their children can see that in their parents. And so I believe that before that we can bring our children up in the nurture and admonition of God, we've got to personally have a spiritual relationship with God that dictates and guides every aspect of our life, or we can't really properly bring up our children. We have to be able to function socially as parents, interact with our neighbors, interact with those that we go to at the stores, to behave properly when that we're interacting at Walmart, when we're at other functions, interacting with other people. The children are learning by the way that the parents behave. And so our social skills and our social interaction has a big bearing upon our children, because they're learning this as they grow up. The same thing with financial instructions. Parents need to control and learn how to manage their own finances and you teach your children those things. I learned those things from observing my parents as they paid their bills, as money, my father worked and brought money into the house and they tried to distribute that money. I saw my parents make sure that that the Lord's money was given each week to the Lord's cause and to support that cause. I learned those things by observation. They were practiced in the family that I was raised up in. And I'm sure that there were lots of mistakes made by my parents. None of us come with a manual. We have to learn, but we have a good manual right here if we'll get into it and learn how to do it. But those all of those aspects are important for the parent to be in the right moral condition, to be in the right spiritual condition, to be socially adept at interacting and behaving themselves socially, and to manage their finances, because all of this is going to help to mold the children. And another part of that is discipline. Discipline must be administered in a family, but it must be administered in love. And a family without some kind of discipline is a family that is going to be in chaos. It's going to be in chaos because part of parenting is disciplining your children. I'm sure that all of us have been out somewhere and that we've seen a child throw a temper tantrum in the middle of the floor and scream and squall because they wanted something. And the parents just ignore them or they just give them what they want. Well, the next time they just squall a little louder. And so there is a measure of discipline that's required in every family. And unfortunately, that's what a lot of these young people are lacking out here today, is they get no discipline at home. They get no direction, and they just get what they want. And so that's what they expect when they go out and begin to make their own way, is to just get whatever they want. And if they don't get it, they just squall a little bit louder. They just have a demonstration, or they have a sit-in, or they do this or they do that to get their way. And unfortunately, our government has become so politically correct that the first person that seems to squall out a little bit, they want to change everything to give them what they want. And so I'm afraid that we're raising a whole generation of babies who want their way because they've always got their way, and they don't get any discipline at home. You know, tending a garden, it doesn't matter how good your soil is. Brother Bo can tell you this. He's a gardener, and I'm not a gardener. But it doesn't matter how good the soil is. If you don't tend to it and till it some, it's just going to sprout up with weeds. It doesn't matter how much potential your child has. If they don't have some discipline to manage that potential, then they're just going to be, their life's going to be filled with weeds and confusion. And who knows where they're going to end up. And so some discipline is required from the parents in every relationship. Now, what about the child? Well, the child plays a part in this as well. But we as parents have to recognize certain things about children. From all the studies that I have tried to read and understand, and I think that everyone will pretty much agree with this, that the best and most important time in a child's life is from the time that they're born until they're about 16 years old. That's when you've really got the most influence upon them. And the closer they get to 16, the less influence you have. And so those early years are critical. They're the years that you begin to form the foundations of what they believe, the way that they behave, the things that they, to give them a moral compass. If you haven't accomplished that by the time that they're 16, then they're going to be out in the world and pretty much on their own without a moral compass to guide them. That's why that those early years are so important, because of our developmental stages. And so I think all of us who have raised teenagers, we know that about the time they get to be about 13 or 14, they begin to exercise their own will against ours. How strong that is and how successful they are at it comes back to the earlier ages and the discipline and the form of discipline and the effectiveness of discipline to bring them up to that point. We had two teenagers. Nathan was a little harder to control than Nicole was. But to be honest with you, our teenagers were never gave us a whole lot of trouble. Maybe we were blind, but not saying we didn't have any trouble, but some more than others. But still, we tried to give them the right foundation. And by the time that they get to be 16, 17, 18, they're going to go their own way. And they know that the law is on their side, that when they turn 18, they can pretty much do whatever they want. Now, you might be able to make them come to church till they're 16 or 17, but when they turn 18, they're pretty much out of your hands. So you've got to take advantage of those early years to bend them in the right direction, because that you're going to run out of time to do that. And in doing that, there's things we have to recognize about our children. They have a body. They have a body, just like we do. And it's our responsibility as parents to teach them the importance of that body, how to take care of it, how to nurture it. Because a healthy body and the strength that goes with it has a lot of effect upon a child's mind, upon his attitude, about his developmental skills. And so we as parents, we have to help them learn about themselves, about what's good for their body, what's not good for their body. But I tell you what, if mom and dad are always sitting around drinking a beer or taking in alcohol or doing drugs or whatever, what are you teaching your child? You're teaching your child all the wrong things about their body. It's important for us to teach them to eat right, to exercise. You know, you're hearing things that you hear out in public, but those are important things. Those are important because that the family and those early years is what's going to help form that child. And so the body's important. And for them to understand how their body's going to function, it's difficult as a child comes into puberty. Boys, things happen in boys' bodies. Things happen in girls' bodies. It's important for parents to prepare them for those things, to explain them to them, to help them adjust to them. They're going to have all different kinds of hormone changes as they go through adolescence. All that's part of parenting, to help them struggle through that. Some of those subjects are difficult to talk with them about, but where would you rather they learn them from you who love them and want them to develop and understand what's happening, or to learn it out on the corner or in the classroom somewhere from a bunch of kids who's got things twisted? You're better off to teach them those things and help them to understand what's happening to them as they get into those ages. And so that's one aspect of it. A child has a body that has to be addressed, has to be kept clean. It has to be taught to take care of itself and the changes that are going to take place. A child has a heart. And by heart, I mean affections. A child is going to have things that it likes and things that it doesn't like. And so it's important for us to help guide those affections, to put their heart on the right things and to resist the wrong things. And so their heart and their affections are important. And they're going to learn those things by experience, by what they see. They see the things that mom and dad are attached to. Those are likely the things that they're going to attach to. The things that mom and dad hold as important and valuable, they'll begin to grab hold of those same ideas. If mom and dad can't get along and they're constantly bickering and battling each other, then the child's going to be confused on its affections. And so we have a huge responsibility to make sure that there's love and harmony and peace in our family to the extent that we possibly can, because that's having an affection or having an impression upon the child's affections, and those are an important part of its development for the rest of its life. The child has a mind, and that mind needs to have information. We feed information and data and teach them facts and figures and all of those things. That's an important part of the mind. But the mind also has to learn how to use that information and reason and to figure out problems and to do problem solving and to know how to use that information correctly. All that's part of their upbringing and all part of the bending. For instance, we were talking about guns. And I'm an advocate of the Second Amendment. And I believe that if you're going to have a gun in the house, then you need to teach your children about the gun. You need to teach them how to handle it. You need to make them familiar with it. Because having the facts without having the reasoning to go with it is dangerous. You know, someone once said a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. Well, that's because knowledge without the ability to reason and using that knowledge in a reasonable way can get you into a lot of trouble. And so we have to address the mind and the reason with our children and their imagination. Children have imaginations, and that's good because society advances and has continued and will continue to advance through the imagination and dreaming the impossible or dreaming those things. But a child has to learn how to use information and reason combined with the imagination to produce proper thinking. Because, you know, a child likes to pretend, but they've got to soon got to learn real quickly that just because that you imagine that you can fly doesn't mean that you really can, and you can't jump out that window because that you imagine that you can fly. And that whole concept carries through. Imagination is good, but it's got to be balanced with reason and information. And that's our responsibility. That's our responsibility as parents. Don't delegate it out to the school. Don't delegate it out to a textbook. That's our responsibility to try to teach them those things. But the most important thing that we have to teach our children is that they have an immortal soul. They have a soul that is life from God, and God has given it to them, and it's going to exist forever. And what they do with that soul rests upon them and the choices that they make. What will they do with that soul? Because you see, with that soul comes will, a self-will, and they can choose. Will I entrust that soul back to God who gave it? Because I've learned about God. I've learned of His love. I've learned that He's my Creator. I've learned that He cares for me. I learned that He wants the best for me. Will I entrust my soul to Him? Or will I keep my soul for myself and go do what I want to do and go down the pathway that I want to go? That's the most important thing that we can teach our children. And all of that has to work together from the time that they're little. And that when they come, as they grow up, that they learn that that life that they have, that person, that being that they are, is a gift from God. And part of that gift that God has given us is the ability to make choices and to do with our life what we want to do. But we have to learn that those choices have consequences. And that's where the discipline and all of these things come in. And it helps to form in a child's mind when they come to that age, what do I want to do with this life that I have? Will I trust it and give it to God? Or will I keep it for myself and go do what I want to do? That's the most important thing that we have to teach our children. And if we fail to teach them that, all the knowledge that we've given them, all the social skills that we've given them, all of the other things that we've given them will have amounted to nothing unless they realize the value of their soul and that they and they alone will determine its course. God has already done what is necessary to save their soul. He sent His Son into the world, and Jesus died for our sins, and we can teach them all those facts. And God has made sure that there's nothing between them and Him except their own will. Every other requirement has been met, and it comes down to what will you do with your soul? Will you keep it for yourself, or will you give it to God through the Lord Jesus Christ? That's the most important thing that we can teach them. And it starts from the time that you begin to nurse them. And it's important that you expose them to teaching, that you bring them to Sunday school, that they learn as they grow up, and it becomes a natural part of their life to learn about God. Now, I'm about out of time. I talked a little bit about the parent. I talked a little bit about the child. But what about the education itself? What about the education itself? What is it that we are to teach them? Well, the word where it says to train up, that's an interesting word. Because what the word means in the Hebrew, it has two meanings. The first meaning is to make narrow. So what do? As you train up a child, you narrow it down and to bring it in a right pathway, to bring it in a correct pathway. And so the idea is that of all that's out there, your responsibility as a parent is to narrow that pathway down for the child so that it walks in a certain direction. So that's the idea. One of the ideas in training up a child is to narrow down the pathway that they walk in. The second idea that's behind that Hebrew word is to put into their mouth for taste and nourishment. Now, that goes back to before that we had baby food and puree things and ways to make the food so that the child could eat it. The parent would take and chew that food up. And then they would put it into the child's mouth so that it could get nourishment and was able to taste it. And so that's what it means to train them up, to nourish them from yourself, to make it so that they can be nourished on it. And so we have the idea of narrowing down the pathway and nourishing them from your own food and feeding them yourself. That's the idea behind training them up. Now, how do we do that? And I'm about out of time, but there's two ways. There's two things that are involved. And we've narrowed it down to what we call the carrot and the stick. The carrot and the stick. Rewards and discipline. Rewards and discipline. That's the way that the Bible lays out from the beginning. From the very beginning of Genesis to the last chapter in Revelation, it teaches us that good is rewarded with good things and wrong things are rewarded with punishment. Adam and Eve were told not to eat of the tree. They broke they did what God told them not to do. There was a punishment that went along with it. But if they continued to do well, there was a reward that went along with it. That's the way God designed for the human beings to learn, is through rewards and punishment. Rewards and punishment. And if God has taught us that all the way through His book, why would we think that it would be any different in raising our children? That's the methods that we have to use. And hopefully, we get to the point where the rewards exceed the punishment. And the child realizes as it grows up that I want rewards and I don't want punishment. I don't want the negatives, I want the positives. And as we guide them that direction, hopefully they'll give up those things that are negative and they will embrace the things that are positive. That's what we are to do as parents. And it's God's way of dealing with us. That's how He deals with us, to bring us to Him. It's through a system of rewards and punishments. Rewards and punishment. The carrot and the stick. And so God designed for human beings to learn that way. And that's the way that we have to teach our children. And it brings us back again to the idea that discipline within the family is essential. The Bible is filled with this principle. Later on in the book of Proverbs, in the 29th chapter, in the 15th verse, it says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." Now you think about that. The rod and reproof giveth wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother shame. The worst thing that you can do for a child is leave them on their own. Leave them on their own without any guidance, without any instruction, without any teaching. Just throw them out and let them learn for themselves. Because I can tell you that fertile soil will bring out forth weeds. That's what it'll do. It needs cultivating. It needs to have the weeds pulled out. It needs to have some guidance and direction. And that's where our responsibility comes from. We're to use wise observation. That means that we're supposed to watch our children and we are to instruct them and to help them based upon their own bend somewhat. Every child has a different nature. Children are not going to be the same. And we have to learn our children. One may be a visual learner, another may be an auditory learner. We have to learn about our children so that we can help guide them in the way that their nature is most bent, and that they might be able to produce from that nature. The one thing that I would say is that we have to recognize that a child is an individual, not an appendage to the parent. Now, what I mean by that is, you cannot live your life in your child. That's not your job. That child is an individual. Just because you wanted to be a cheerleader and never made it, that doesn't mean that you have to make that child become the cheerleader that you never were, or the football player that you never were, or the baseball player that you never were. The wrong thing to do is to try to live out your dreams in your child. You need to let that child develop their own dreams and develop their own life, and you enable and help them to do that because they are individuals. I've seen it, and you all have too, that so many parents, that they want this and they want that, and that's the direction they drive their child, even though the child may not want that. If we really want what's best for our child, then we have to be close to them. We have to learn their likes and dislikes and learn their nature and the things that they are attracted to and the things that they need to be repelled from. But don't try to make them a reproduction of what we wanted to be and never succeeded at, because you will ruin that child's life if you do that. Remember that they are an individual. They are not an appendage. And so what do we do? We try to make sure that we instruct the children to their own to their best benefit. Give them good instructions. Good instructions about truth itself. Tell them the truth. Don't lie to them. Tell them the truth. We're having to deal with Olivia and Alicia right now as they've lost their papaw. Tell them the truth as much as you're able that they can comprehend, but don't try to hide the truth from them. Tell them the truth as they grow up. Teach them about God. Teach them about Christ. Teach them about the Bible, because they're going to have all kinds of situations out in life where they're going to need some instruction. And all the instruction that they can get is right here if they'll just learn to use it. But they won't use it if they don't see Mom and Dad using it. They won't use it if they ever see you take it off the shelf, because children learn by example. And that was the greatest method of instruction, is example. Children learn by example. I'm going to close with a poem that I read years ago, and it's become, let me try to find it here, to get to what I want. I read it years ago, and it's always been one that's been a favorite of mine. It says, the title of it is Sermons We See. It says, I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather one would walk with me than merely tell the way. The eye is a better pupil and more willing than the ear. Fine counsel is confusing, but example's always clear. For to see good put in action is what everybody needs. I soon can learn to do it if you'll let me see it done. I can watch your hands and actions, but your tongue too fast may run. And the lecture you deliver may be very wise and true, but I'd rather get my lessons by observing what you do. For I might misunderstand you and the high advice you give, but there's no misunderstanding how you act and how you live. When I see a deed of kindness, I am eager to be kind. When a weaker brother stumbles and a strong man stays behind, just to see if it can help him, then the wish grows strong in me to become as big and thoughtful as I know that friend to be. And all the travelers can witness that the best of guides today is not the one who tells them, but the one who shows the way. One deed of kindness noticed is worth 40 that are told. Who stands with men of honor learns to hold his honor dear. For right living speaks a language which to everyone is clear. Though an able speaker charms me with his eloquence, I say, I'd rather see a sermon than to hear one any day. And that's the lesson that we need to learn about our young people. They're watching us, they're observing us. And everything that we do is an example to them. Whether it's at home, whether it's at the ball game and you lose your temper and you yell at the umpire and or you curse out the guy on third base or whatever that it might be. Those children are seeing all of that, and all of that's being taken in, and it's bending them. It's bending them to what they're going to be. And so that's my lesson today. It's one that we need to take to heart continually and be reminded of the importance of setting the right example in our home and in our church. I appreciate your attention. Cindy, you got a song?